Let's sit. No more. Let's learn. Let's evolve. Let's talk. Today is Let's Talk Social Justice with your host, Kevin Yowie.
Good morning. You're listening to AAA Murray Country. It's Tuesday and I'm Kevin Yowie. So you know what that means. Today on Let's Talk, it's all things social justice. But as a Waka Waka and South Sea Islander man, I am a visitor to this country. So before I go any further, I'd like to first acknowledge the traditional owners, caretakers and custodians of these lands I meet on today here at the AAA radio station and pay my respects to the elders past and present. So last week we kicked off a new series on social justice, Let's Talk, where we're now focusing on the next five episode to look at climate justice. And last week we had the pleasure of playing a pre-recorded panel discussion about Indigenous climate justice that was held by the Institute for Collaborative Race Research, where I'm also a director at. And that panel discussion was hosted by our brother Bo Spearham, who's no stranger to these parts of the traps. And that was a deadly panel of some sort activists here in Meanjin who are able to talk about what exactly climate justice and sovereignty means to them. And talking about deadly activists around the traps, we are lucky this morning to be joined by someone very close to me and whose family is very close to me, given how close our families and particularly our grandmothers were when my nan was still alive. So on the phone today, we are joined by Butchala and Wapabara woman Jade Gould, who's up on Butchala country today. Jade Gould, thank you for joining us this morning.
No problem, Kevin. It's my pleasure.
And Jade, I guess for people who don't know much about you, are you able to introduce yourself, your mob, where you grew up, and tell us a little bit about the sort of work and background that you've that you're currently involved in?
Yeah, no worries. So, Jade Gould. I'm a Butchala and Wapabara woman. So Butchala country is the Fraser Coast region and includes Gari. And then Wapabara country includes the Keppel Island group off the coast of Yeppoon. So saltwater woman through and through, but, you know, like all Murrays, have connections almost everywhere as well. So I got connections to Mullandale mob and also mob down in Victoria. So, and a bit about myself. I grew up on Butchala country, surrounded by elders, and was very fortunate to be immersed in culture as a young child, attending language classes and attending field trips and things like that with elders, where they would show us sort of how mob used to use the land pre-colonization. And, you know, for me that was really important growing up. It really instilled me with a sense of cultural identity and sort of gave me the strength to, you know, be able to interact in the wider community, confidence to interact with the wider community. So, yeah, really fortunate to have that sort of cultural immersion growing up.
Absolutely.
And I guess that...
Oh, so you go, sis.
Oh, I was just going to say that sort of inspired me because, you know, when we were younger, we were really instilled with a cultural obligation to care for country. So one of our Butchala laws is what's good for country must come first. And so that sort of inspired me to go on and do, formal education in science, and identified that as a way, you know, where I could bridge the two sort of knowledge systems, like our mob's knowledge systems, which spans, you know, 100,000 years plus, bridging that with Western science knowledges and, attempting to marry those two up in an effective way.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jade, obviously you and I have known each other since we were little kids, but I guess we probably come close when we started going to university. And I remember for listeners who are tuning in, Jade and I went to university at the same time. Well, Jade, you went to James Cook Uni up in Townsville, that's right, yeah?
Yes, don't hold that.
And I think we first met at Uni Games, Jade, back maybe 2012, so just over 10 years ago now, 11 years, coming on 11, can you believe it, up at Cairns for Uni Games. And I guess that's when I first really started to get to know some of the academic work that you were involved in terms of your undergraduate course and I guess getting to know each other outside of, you know, just our family connections from Hervey Bay, because regular listeners will know that I grew up on Butchala country as well. And tell us a little bit about your undergraduate course you did up at James Cook and how that relates to some of the work that you're doing now, Jade.
Yeah, sure. So I did a Bachelor of Science at JCU in my undergrad with a major in ecology. So basically the study of ecosystems, and it was interesting, but it really sort of missed that, that we're part of the environment, and the way, you know, the Australian landscape is because of the way that we manage country. And so sort of going through that degree, there was no mention of, you know, our mob's impact on, you know, this evolution of Australian ecology. Because when you're talking about, you know, our existence on this continent, it spans thousands and thousands of years. And so we definitely have had an impact on the way the environment has sort of responded to the way that we've managed country. And I guess it just sort of really, it piqued my interest because, you know, it really kind of fed that, desire in me to know more about my country.
And Jade, I guess, like you in your introduction, you outlined that you were privileged enough to grow up on country up there in Hervey Bay on Batchelor Country, but also Gari as well. Tell me a little bit about, obviously, that influenced you in terms of some of your professional career and in terms of your research in the academy. What was it like growing up in Hervey Bay? I mean, you grew up, I guess, in the 90s then. Can you tell, for people who don't know much about Hervey Bay, can you paint a bit of a picture of what the community is like in that country?
So Hervey Bay is just a small, town in southeast Queensland. And I guess from my perspective, it was just sort of, we always were instilled that this was our place and that we sort of belong to Hervey Bay. And just growing up with my family who have lived here, you know, and we were fortunate enough to not be removed, some of our family. So we've maintained our connection here. But I guess, you know, just being out on country, and you sort of don't think of these things as connecting to country when you're a child, but, you know, being taken out, by your aunties and uncles and nans and pops, and be shown, you know, how to get bait for fishing and how to get yugaris, which is what we call pippies. And, you know, that made up a big sort of part of my childhood, sort of running along the beaches and collecting yugaris. And, you know, as a child, I remember being able to collect buckets and buckets, you know, thousands and thousands of yugaris. And just in my lifetime alone, like, I'm not yet 30, we've seen a decline in these yugaris on the island where, you know, you're flat out getting a bucket these days. And these yugaris, you know, they can be found in Middens, which is sort of a, you know, a cultural heritage site where we sort of just chucked our, you know, fishing equipment and the leftover rubbish of our, you know, the shellfish that we ate. And these yugaris make up sort of a large portion of the Middens sites, and the Middens sites are dated thousands and thousands of years. So, you know, that's just one sort of example of, you know, in my lifetime, seeing the impacts of climate change directly impacting on our cultural sort of practices.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really just quite clear, but sort of piecing together the puzzle that, you know, the decline in yugaris, the decline in, you know, us being able to get a fish or feed our mob, during special occasions, linking that to, you know, the actual impacts of climate change was sort of something that developed with my, you know, formal education.
Absolutely. And I guess touching on your formal education, you alluded to some of the key components of your undergrad, Jade. And I'm just wondering, in terms of your university stuff, you've also gone on to do your master's. And I understand that your master's looked at the impacts of climate change on Indigenous peoples, and particularly on Batchelor people, your mob. Can you tell us a bit more about that particular research and how that's helped you sort of form a very sophisticated understanding of the impacts of climate on your mob and your countries?
Yeah, so I did a Master's of Science with a major in environment and sustainability with a large focus on, you know, the impacts of climate change. And I did a case study on my mob, but looked at the impacts sort of worldwide and then with an Australian sort of focus. And there was really not much available at that time on, you know, what the impact will be on our mob. And you know, it was concerning at the time because, you know, we were seeing the effects of climate change on the ground. And when I talk about the effects, we're talking about, you know, our mob are some of the lowest socioeconomic sort of status the most disadvantaged group in society. And our mob often rely on sort of going out on country to subsidise, you know, grocery bills or even just to maintain mental health. And if you're not able to do those things anymore, you know, it will impact on us greatly. Because our culture, our health, our well-being is highly dependent on the environment and access to our country.
Absolutely.
And so I looked at that in my thesis, and I used five sort of social determinants to measure the impacts or the perceived impacts of climate change. And I surveyed my mob, and the most interesting thing was, the five social determinants were culture, well-being, and it's been a little while, I think about 5 years now, so
I'm really
trying to wreck this brain of mine. But well-being was another, infrastructure and jobs, and they all indicated that culture would be most impacted on because they sort of understood that fundamental sort of link between culture and the environment without having an in-depth understanding of climate change, just by seeing sort of the changes on country. And then the second, highest impact they seen was health. So, and that was, followed culture closely. So, you know, it was interesting to see mob linking those two things together without sort of having formal qualifications in climate science and things like that. So that was really interesting. And it sort of paved the way for a little bit more research in the space for my community. Cause now we're looking into the impacts of climate change on Gari and Batchelor Country as a whole. So, yeah, it's been really sort of worthwhile work. And I just remember when I first started my master's, it was still sort of, in those, at the time where climate change was still sort of being debated as, being a myth or, so it was very interesting sort of doing that work in that time and really seeing the results and how our mob understand country and how, changes to country will impact on us.
For sure. And Jade, look, I know you are living up on country at the moment and you do have mob up in Wapabara Country as well, up further north. But I do know that you have lived around, different parts of Queensland and southeast Queensland. And I remember once when I was even doing child safety work out in Roma going back 5-6 years ago, you were actually out on a work site. I think you were studying one of the rivers or river systems out that way. Jade, I'm wondering, what kind of experience does that give you, not just being on your country, but being able to, visit other parts of the state and really get a sense of how climate change is impacting different parts? Because, you haven't just stayed in Hervey Bay, you have cruised around a fair bit, including, travelled internationally as well, some for your work as well. So what's that experience like, being able to travel around and take your skill sets in different places?
It's definitely sort of a big learning curve going out to other people's country and, because I sort of grew up in a little bubble here in Hervey Bay, and that Batchelor people are very active and, proactive in managing country. But sort of moving out, talking to other people's about their country and not having any sort of relationship with their mobs. So sort of making sure that we build relationships before we start going out and asking for information. So that was a big learning curve for me. Mm. I see it all the time when people come into my community, mob with their sort of guard up. And, there's a lot of questions and, they're basically just holding you to account. But and I guess another big learning in my experience, because I've been a public servant for a couple of years now, is just learning how country is managed by government, because at the end of the day, we live in Australia and it's managed by the government, and sort of learning legislation and how mob can utilise legislation and policy to make changes on the ground to see sort of better outcomes for country.
Yeah.
So that's been a big learning curve. And then just one more is, it's one thing to go out to community and be able to effectively engage and gather information and build relationships. And then it's another thing to get that cultural knowledge and use it to inform policy development or sort of environmental management decisions, because a lot of the policies, and environmental management frameworks were made without, our input. And so it's very difficult to inform that policy with our cultural knowledge, because in sort of Western science and the way government manages country. They like to silo up, you know, water quality versus water flow are managed by two different departments within Queensland. So I guess sort of on the flip side is mobs see things holistically. You know, when you ask them what's the most important thing on country, they say everything because everything's connected. So that was another big learning curve, sort of collecting the information, building trust with community to get that information, but also making sure that it's being used effectively. And that, I think, is the more difficult side of it.
Yeah. And Jade, you've touched on this, and it's obviously clear from your work that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and First Nations people globally are experiencing some of the worst impacts of climate change, leading to some, you know, cases to further, you know, disposition from their lands and waters, and a heightened experiences of state violence, economic precarity and homelessness. You know, some of the things that you've touched on. Jade, I'm wondering, for people who might not have thought much about this before, can you explain exactly why First Nations people are bearing the brunt of this climate justice and crisis?
Yeah, well, I lived in Gundawindi for a sort of brief period of time, and during that time, it was the worst ever drought. So, you know, it was the first time ever that the McIntyre River stopped flowing. Mm. And I never lived in a community where they were so dependent on sort of the weather. Like in Hervey Bay, you know, the weather is fine. We get sort of, you know, okay rainfall. We do experience droughts and things like that. But out west, you know, they heavily rely on the river, like the whole sort of economy does. And just sort of understanding that impact, not only on sort of the economic side, but the mental health side as well, you know, yeah, it really impacts on people's, you know, mental health when they go to the river and they see, you know, like there's fish kills. Like, you know, it was one of the most, you know, mentally draining things going out to community and talking to them about fish kills, because, you know, they're talking about, you know, their totems, you know, species that they, you know, the relationship with the totems is like that of like a family member. And to see, you know, millions and millions of your totems sort of dead in the river, you know, it was very, you know, mentally draining. And then also sort of on the flip side is, you know, not many mob out there have aircon, and, you know, we experience some of the hottest days on record out there. And, you know, just checking in with elders and things like that to make sure that they have water and they have, you know, fans and things like that. But I also remember, you know, during those heat waves, there was a blackout. So, you know, and, you know, communities are some of the last that get their lights turned back on. So, you know, those are just some of the examples where, you know, our disadvantage is sort of exacerbated because of climate change.
Yeah. And you know, it's been pretty disastrous these last few years. You know, like you've touched on, you know, there's been bushfires, floods, pandemics, cyclones, droughts. And I know that a lot of Butchula country on Gari was particularly impacted by the fires on the island in the summer of 2019-2020. Can you tell us a little bit about those events and the community's response to it? I remember, Jade, seeing lots of stuff on Facebook at the time and lots of media reports coming out. It must have been a pretty, full-on little while for you mob up that way, having to deal with that.
Yeah, it was devastating. So I think over 60% of the island had burnt by the end of the fire. And at the beginning of the fire, it was sort of in the northern part of the island and didn't pose a huge risk to things like built infrastructure and, you know, people. Mm. And so it wasn't a big priority for, you know, the government to put it out at the time. But our mob were saying, come on, we need to do something. We can't just let this part of our country burn because, you know, it's not a priority to you. And we really had to fight for a seat at the table. So it was the first time TOs have been given a seat at the table to have a role in managing a large-scale sort of natural disaster. And so we had an incident management team or panel established. So Queensland Fire and Rescue sort of took over the management of the fire once it was declared a natural disaster. And sort of it was really quite a pivotal moment in our history, because we got to sit there with sort of, you know, the chief inspector and, you know, people that call the shots in, you know, these sorts of situations. So it was really good. But we was also able to sort of provide that cultural knowledge and understanding of country and even conditions of country to Queensland Fire and Rescue to inform their management of the island. So, for example, you know, mob on the ground knew sort of that part of country was really dry, and, you know, there's certain plant species that have sort of more oil and are more flammable, and therefore that part would sort of, you know, be more of a risk than others. And then we also provided a lot of advice on what lakes they could draw fresh water from. So that was really interesting because, you know, we do, and it was really difficult sort of picking and choosing because, like I said earlier, you know, we see country as holistic and everything is connected. But, you know, there's certain places on the island that are highly significant, and there were some lakes are quite sensitive or have quite sensitive ecosystems. So some of the lakes are connected to the underwater groundwater system. And we have stories about, you know, our rainbow serpents traveling through the groundwater systems. And so those are the lakes that we were really trying to protect because if they came in and took water from that area after, you know, following drier and hotter conditions, you know, those sort of ecosystems would have been more impacted on. So sort of trying our best to pick locations and things like that to sort of help mitigate the fire, but also sort of minimize the risk on country. And we also had lots of debates around, you know, there was a lot of commentary from the public around, you know, just get salt water and dump it. And, you know, people sort of didn't understand at the time that the salt water might have even more impact than the fire, because if you drop salt water onto sort of the some of the landscape over there, it will kill some of the symbiotic fungi that live in the root system, and the forests and things like that over there are dependent on that because it's such a low nutrient environment. So they really need that fungi to get the nutrients. And if we drop the salt water, the plants would essentially die. So,
and especially given really that Gari is a island made up of sand, right, Jade? Is that, and you had to be very mindful in terms of what you were doing because of that very fact.
Yes, that's right. And then we, you know, a lot of the sites sort of on the island, we're talking about shelter trees. So we have hundreds of years old. They're shelter trees where a mob used to sort of take shelter in, you know, giant trees. They were at risk. So sending a lot of sort of resources over to help protect those areas. So things that were important to us, we had that opportunity for the first time. So we have a mission site over the island. It was one of the first missions established in the country at Big Giver Creek. And there's a lot of burial sites there too. So we got an opportunity to do a cultural burn there and minimize the risk before the fire came too close. And then also sort of protecting a lot of scar trees. So sending in rangers on the ground. I think at the time, the Butchala Aboriginal Corporation provided more resources than even the local council.
Yeah.
So it was, really sort of a sad time for us, but it was a really good opportunity for us to show, you know, the wider community that we do have the skills.
Yes.
We do have the knowledge that can help, you know, in a really big way. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Jake, you know, I know there's been lots of going on in Gari, and for mob here, particularly in the southeast corner of Queensland, we'll have seen over the last couple of years some stuff in the news. We know that in June 2022, around 22 hectares of land on Gari was handed back to the Butchala people, your mob, as freehold land. Jade, I'm wondering, for people who are listening this morning who don't know much about this, can you talk about the significance of getting that land back under Butchala control?
Yes. So we don't have or own any assets on the island. So we were granted native title in 2015, and with that we sort of got a certificate that said you can dance and practice culture on country. But, you know, when it comes to building assets and building, you know, communal wealth for Butchala people, we still don't have, you know, that opportunity. And that's what that land means for our mob, you know, to build assets, to be able to build sort of a ranger base on the island and things like that. You know, there's lots of aspirations our mob have for these blocks of land, but it's just really nice to actually own a piece of our country.
Absolutely. And Jade, I'm wondering, one of the really interesting projects happening on Gari is the Butchala Land and Sea Ranger program. I'm wondering, are you able to tell us a little bit about the Butchala Rangers and why it's important to have Butchala people caring for Butchala country?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, extremely important. I guess, you know, in the basic terms, I think, or I believe, Bachelor people, you know, will take better care of country because we have higher stakes in it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, our whole lives basically depend on having a healthy country. And so, you know, our mob really make sure that, you know, things are done the right way on country. You know, we won't skip corners and we won't, you know, we have different priorities in the government and it's not motivated by sort of economic growth and things like that. You know, country comes first.
Absolutely. And Jade, I know one of the reasons we were very eager to speak with you as part of this series of climate justice was absolutely because of you. You're someone committed to doing tangible and material work to care for your homelands, for your own and future generations. I know, for example, that you're currently co-leading a climate adaption project on Gari with other mob from the Bachelor community. Can you tell us a bit about that project and what kinds of things you're focusing on?
Yeah, so we're really, like the first step in the project is to just get our elders and community members in to identify, you know, and it might seem crazy, but identify on paper what is culturally significant to us because that's never been done. And, you know, it's hard to sort of hand over that information because, you know, in our culture, you know, you have to go through ceremony and you have to sort of prove to elders that you're, you know, worthy of holding that kind of knowledge, you know, because this knowledge is sacred knowledge that's built over thousands and thousands of years. And so I guess that's the first step in the Gari Climate Project. But our aim is to be able to assess what the impacts of climate change will be on our cultural values within the World Heritage Area. So the World Heritage Area basically just includes Gari and some of the oceans surrounding it. And it's part of a new toolkit that was developed by CSIRO. So I helped along with a handful of traditional owners whose country also falls in a World Heritage listed area. And so the World Heritage listing just means that, you know, there was a set of criteria that our country met to be sort of acknowledged as a internationally significant place. But in saying that, our mob weren't included and our cultural values weren't included. And so our mob, you know, think and truly believe that, you know, country is the way it is because of the way that we manage country. And to say that sort of Gari is, you know, this valuable natural ecosystem and we didn't have anything to do with us is, you know, it's wrong. And so, you know, part of that is trying to correct that narrative, you know, and put us back in the scene. And, you know, to achieve true conservation on the island, you need Bachelor people living there and managing country as we used to, you know, reintroducing landscape scale, traditional burning, even sort of the sustainable take of different species, you know, played a big role in the way the Gari's ecosystems are. So we do have a fair way to go with the project, but we're hoping that all the work that we do will inform a climate adaptation plan that the Department of Environment and Science will be helping to develop, and that will inform the management of the island. And so, yeah, hopefully we can get some good outcomes around sort of reintroducing landscape scale, traditional berms and things like that.
Yeah, Jade, lots happening up that way and on the island. And I know, you know, from all the different posts from mob involved and even seeing mob, you know, go through the ranger course and, you know, heading over, and I always lots of photos uploaded. It's really deadly to see just how much Bachelor mob are able to take control of your own affairs and start to really make those differences for future generations. Jade, I'm wondering, and it's a bit of a tough question, but I'm wondering, to round out this interview, are you able to tell us what Indigenous climate justice means to you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a big question, but I'll give it a go. I just think it's about, you know, getting our mob, you know, upskilled in a position. So the last couple of years I've really invested in, you know, nation building, because in our day and age, you can't just go out on country and do traditional burns. You just can't. And the way that, you know, you have to exercise your native title rights and you know, the current system is we have a prescribed body corporate, so you have to have a legal entity so you can sort of sue and be sued, and that's how you manage your rights. And so to exercise your rights, you have to have, you know, corporate knowledge and governance and know how government works and how policy works to actually be able to go out on the ground and, you know, practice traditional land management. And so I think, you know, achieving social justice is sort of tapping into that gap and really sort of nation building, upskilling our community so we can advocate to get to that, because we all know, you know, nothing is given to us.
Yeah.
You know, we have to really, really fight for any sort of any progress that we get on country. We, you know, you know that we really put pressure on government to leverage anything we can to get opportunities on the ground for our community.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jade, I remember even years ago when, you know, when we first reconnected up in Cairns, and even in your undergrad, but also, you know, linking up with you at all these different events that, you know, we've caught up with over the years, you always said, oh, I'm learning all this to go back home, Kevin. Like, I'm taking all this knowledge to go back home. And, you know, to sit here today, listening to the wisdom and knowledge based in your own cultural background, but also in science, as a scientist. You know, I'm really proud of you, Jade, and I can't thank you enough for joining me this morning. And when me and my producer first started talking about a climate justice series, I said we absolutely have to get some of them mob up from Butchelor Country, Harvey Bay on, and you're the first person to come to mind. So thank you for, you know, for sharing these yarns with us this morning. And absolutely, anyone wanting to know more about some of the stuff happening up on Gari, you can always have a look online, because there's lots happening. So Jade, thank you very much. And please give a shout out to Auntie Frances and Auntie Mally. Let them know that I said hello, and I hope they tune in for this yarn as well. And a big shout out to all the mob up in Harvey Bay. And thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hi, thanks, Kevin. It was a pleasure.
We'll yarn soon, sis. Ta-da. And for everyone else, if you want to catch up on this, have a look on the AAA website. If you want to catch up on the last week's show, have a look on the AAA website or catch us on our socials. But until then, I'm Kevin Yaoye. We'll see you next week. Bye.
No more whispering in our mind. Let's talk Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au, proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.